Cast again coming up in just a few minutes. The U.S. House of Representatives has passed the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. Congressman Paul Mitchell is a member of the House Armed Services Committee and had a lot of input into this bill. He joins us to talk a little bit more about it. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Paul.
Some good things in this bill. Tell us a little bit about what you wanted to make sure was included and what is included.
Well, I think one of the most important things is a 3% pay raise for military personnel. They've frankly, at points in time, been stuck in terms of compensation. Obviously, their lives are put on hold sometimes from wandering around the world and for our defense. So that was the most important thing. We also, one of the most important, we also put in a change the criteria that the Air Force uses to assess where to base strategic Air Force airplanes. I was disappointed that the Air Force went ahead with basing a wing of the F-35 in Madison, Wisconsin, despite the fact that they really don't want them there, and we really want them in Selfridge. And Selfridge has the immediate access to the largest range east of Mississippi. So we changed the charts, the criteria for that to explicitly include criteria for access to a range and separately also community support, because we believe it's important to the success of something we invest in. An F-35 costs us $80 million in aircraft. I mean, it's not a cheap aircraft, and we need to make sure our people are trained. So we get a variety of things like that in there that I think were extremely important to moving forward our defense. So it's a good bill, and it passed the House overwhelmingly. So conference will sign out of the Senate shortly. Hopefully we'll get that taken care of.
What is this going to mean for the future of Selfridge?
Well, I think the future of Selfridge is in good shape, and I say that because the other thing we've got in the bill was a specific criteria to avoid decommissioning the A-10s until they have an effective replacement. So that was the other thing. So the whole discussion of the A-10s going away, no, we're completing the re-winging of them, putting new wings and structural support on them. They're old aircraft, and they need to be updated. And they can't decommission those until they get to be with Congress to talk about what they're going to do to replace the A-10, which is so important for close air support and ground combat situations. And while we don't like to have ground combat, we better be prepared if we have to.
There have been reports of the possibility of Selfridge becoming the future home of the U.S. Space Force. Is that something that might actually happen?
Well, that's still in development phase. Last count of Selfridge, we had 43 separate entities out of Selfridge. People think of it just as their National Guard base. Homeland Security is there. There's a Coast Guard air station there. There's Customs and Border Protection there. It's got a huge number of federal assets there. And it's got space, so it makes a great deal of sense to put put that there. And it clearly has the adequate space to accommodate it. And one of the things we want to do is efficiently use the resources we have as a government rather than build more or buy more. And frankly, Selfridge offers that. So it has a history of housing a real disparate group of tenants. I think up to 43 last count I had on that.
Yeah, pretty impressive. I want to talk a little bit about the next coronavirus stimulus package that's being debated in the House right now. How far apart are Republicans and Democrats, and what do you think we're going to see in the next round of stimulus spending?
I think there's still a real disconnect there, and they're over a couple of things. One is there's a disconnect of what to do with unemployment compensation. There may be a disconnect between some of my party and me. I believe we need to continue this pandemic unemployment compensation, but to have it at a fixed number of $600 does not make sense. It needs to replace a percentage of individuals' income, not in many cases. And I've had employers talk to me, and people say that people can get more money through unemployment compensation. They can't go into work, and there are jobs out there. Mm-hmm. So we need to fix that. The other is we need to support K-12 education, post-secondary education in terms of the transitions you need to make, physical plant and equipment, those types of things. I support doing that. Now, the problem is we still get a significant amount of money that went to the state that still hasn't been programmed across the country, including Michigan. Our discussion is we want to see the plan for that. And then any money we put in education needs to go for those things and not simply for schools not to be open. They need to have a reopening plan. They need to reopen. Even if it's a combination of distance learning and in-school learning, we need to reopen and allow the economy to open back up. and do it safely. No one's suggesting we not be safe about it, but it is possible to, clearly possible. Other countries have done it. Reopen our schools and move forward with addressing our economy and the needs we have in the community. COVID-19, Paul, is not going away.
No.
Next month. It's not going away in January. It's not going away. It's a virus like many others, and we're going to have to develop drugs to treat it. Hopefully some version of a vaccine, even if it's a flu shot, but it's not going away, which means we need to learn how to function as a society while minimizing the risk, especially for people in nursing homes and elderly people and people with real serious health conditions. They're at great risk, and we need to avoid or minimize any risk of exposure for them.
And the president yesterday indicated, he said, this is going to get worse before it gets better. That's the first that we've really heard him acknowledge that. I feel like the White House is beginning to acknowledge now that we need to mask up. We need to be prepared for perhaps worsening conditions before we develop any kind of a vaccine or a cure.
I'm glad he finally talked honestly or straightforwardly about the COVID-19. We needed to take steps to take it seriously, to address the risks of it. Unfortunately, for a variety of reasons on both sides of the political spectrum, it became politicized. We should, when we're in public and crowded spaces, mask up. When indoors, we should mask up. I do. We should wash our hands more often. We should keep social distancing. All those things, if you look at countries who've done that, it significantly reduces the incidence of the COVID-19 virus and deaths from that. We need to take that seriously. We should have taken it more seriously and talk about it as a leadership role. The idea is somehow you issue mandates and tell people what they have to do. It doesn't sit well with some percentage of people out there. We need to talk about what we need to do to keep people safe, keep themselves safe, their family safe, and recognize that not everyone's going to do that, but if the majority of us do, we are in a far better place.
Yeah. Talking with Congressman Paul Mitchell, we have a primary election here in Michigan in a couple of weeks. You're sitting this one out, but you've endorsed Shane Hernandez as the candidate you'd like to see take your seat in the House at the end of your term. Why?
I became increasingly displeased with the tenor of the accuracy of the advertising of Shane's opponents. Using progressive talking points to say he's not a good conservative Republican just astonished me. It's a lie. The people he's opposing in the race are imposters when they start talking about they're Republicans, that they're conservatives. Whether Shane has demonstrated he is. He's demonstrated he's ready for the job. But when you start basically misrepresenting someone's position, misrepresenting yourself, then it's time to step up and say enough. I think it's wrong. I think it's wrong in a primary. I've stepped in a couple of others at various points in time for the same reason that didn't impact me. But, for example, the Attorney General's race last cycle, I got involved in that because I felt that Ms. Nessel was not exactly being honest, straight. And I think that's fundamentally wrong. You should tell voters where you stand. Talk about where you stand. If you have a conflict and where you stand or a difference in terms of with someone else's in terms of policy, you can talk about that. But simply making things up, trying to confuse voters, is exactly the problem we have in this country. Voters don't know what to believe anymore.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, people get fed up and they say, well, they're all liars. They're all telling lies, and so people just become disenfranchised.
I think people give up. They stop voting. They get frustrated.
Yeah.
And it's counter to what we need in this country. The irony is we need more people voting. Voting ought to be considered some responsibility we all have. We need more people getting informed, not simply reinforcing their preconceived beliefs, but to actually look into issues, talk about issues rather than this person isn't, I don't like this person because whatever, make stuff up. I think Shane's run a consistent campaign. His opponents have not. He's on an honest campaign. And we need to elect people to this office and all offices that at least they're going to tell you straight. They're going to tell you what they're doing and why. You may not always agree, but they're giving you the straight story.
Congressman, always appreciate you joining us. Thanks for your time this morning. Have a great day.
Hey, you too. Take care, Paul.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.